what ended up being called the tomahawk grip, where you turn the shield around and it's an extension of your arm and you're hacking and slashing with it almost like a sword or a baton or something like that.
This is the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. A podcast dedicated to raw action analysis.
Ooh, my gosh. For fans of action cinema out there, how badass would that be?
Each week, we bring you a new action filmmaker to break down your favorite scenes.
360 off person, round kick the guy from a 360 spin.
Now, introducing your hosts, Darren Tun and Mike Messina.
Hello and welcome back to the Action Filmmaking Decoded Podcast. I'm your host, Darren Tun, and with me is my co-host, Mike Messina.
Hello.
For today's guest, we have Justin Eaton, part two. He is known as the stunt man and stunt double in Banshee, Doctor Strange, Daredevil, The Punisher, and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, where he was Emmy nominated for his stunt performance as Captain America, John Walker. He is also married to Cece Ice, double for Black Widow and Scarlet Witch. Now we have some housekeeping for you guys.
We are on Patreon, so for as little as $1 a month, you can help support the show. If you enjoy our content or want access to exclusive video breakdowns from Darren and I, consider supporting at patreon.com/actionfilmmaking.
Yeah, you can also help us out by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, just like Pro Podcast Binger did. They wrote, "A great in-depth podcast for anyone already familiar with action, martial arts, or film. Can't wait to see what other guests and analyses the show has in store." Big thank you to Pro Podcast Binger for that review. Now, Mike, what are some big takeaways for this episode?
Hearing about this one gag that he did for Daredevil. So he stunt doubled Stick, who's sort of the older mentor for Daredevil. And then they get into this fight in the show. And he basically has to jump front flip from the top of the stairs all the way to the bottom of the stairs, land flat on his back with another like 150-ish pound man on top of him, landing on top of him. And it looked gnarly. I'm sure it felt gnarly to be in his position. And him telling us about the process of doing that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think just telling us about who played Stick, I think it was...
Scott Glenn,
yeah. And telling us about how he was just already a badass, I guess, from the start.
Totally.
You know, he is an older gentleman, but yeah, he really didn't need a lot of wires or anything. He was just strong and was moving him around quite easily. The other part that I really enjoyed listening to was when he talked about Falcon and the Winter Soldier, obviously. He was talking about that, I guess, Lamar fight that they did in Prague. Just talking about how he had to reset the scene with the wire work and everything. And then they had this fake pillar that was put in, the work that went in, and also how it was only like a one-day shoot or something like that, I think he said. So that time crunch as well and the stuff they had to cut down, but still being able to convey everything that that scene needed to convey, especially with John Walker making that change into bad Captain America. Spoiler alert. But
spoilers. But yeah, all the character stuff was great. And seeing how they were able to be creative with all their different power sets between the Falcon, the Winter Soldier, and him with Cap Shield. Very cool stuff.
Yeah. He also goes over that episode 5 fight scene between Walker, Falcon, and Bucky. And there's like a little bit of 2-on-1 there. So he talks about how that's accomplished, the difference between using Falcon's wings, and then you have the arm from Bucky, and then you also have the shield that John Walker is using, and how those three kind of come together in one big action.
Called it the tomahawk grip with the shield. Awesome stuff.
Yeah, some new stuff with that shield. But yeah, without further ado, here is Justin Eaton, part two.
I wanted to ask, too, about some of your Daredevil work. I know you doubled Stick, who is an older gentleman here. Didn't have to...
Scott Glenn.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Legendary.
Yeah. You take care of yourself, man.
I'm going to let you kill that kid.
Oh, he's already dead. I caught up with a van while you were dicking around with Nobu's men. I put an arrow in that thing's heart.
War pants, no loincloths. So we were okay covered in that department.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, we were good there. We were good.
But yeah, character much older compared to you, but definitely still nimble, definitely fighting, swinging swords, cutting heads off in different series, things like that. How did that influence the way that you played him physically and that fighting style, the mannerisms, things like that?
That was quite an experience. The hardest thing in look, actually, for that was the hair.
Mm.
Scott had, you know, silver hair, and my applause goes to the hair department for every effort that they could make to make a wig work like that. And we got to the point where I just said, why don't you just bleach my hair and make it silver? Because I know in our first season, they said that they had to go in post and try and help because Scott has such specific hair. It's so difficult to replicate. And also, you know, you're moving around and stuff like that. So your hair isn't going to move the same way that his does as well. So, but yeah, as far as look, that apparently was quite a big challenge for everyone to tackle. But with mannerisms, yeah, Scott is still a badass. So it made doubling him, you know, you had to change slight things, but, you know, as a longtime martial artist and fighter himself, and sometimes you're in a situation where you're doubling someone who doesn't have a big physical back, doesn't have a favorite sport they've ever played and something that you can fall back on. So you take really clean, crisp technique, and you do what you can to kind of mute it and match, you know, what they might be doing.
Right,
where
right.
in Scott's case, I was just a little faster than him. But honestly, he moved really, really well. And truly, truly just a true life action hero. I remember one time he came in for a rehearsal, and he goes, just one sec. Takes a necklace off. That's also a knife. And he reaches down into his boot. Just also has a knife in it. And he goes in his back pocket. Also has a knife in it. Okay, we can start.
He's ready.
Yeah. I remember the first story I ever heard about him. Chris Coy actually told me this story, who was a player on Banshee and has done numerous things since, but Scott was Chris's like mentor. So Chris Coy's telling me this story about how Scott lives out by the Razorback Mountains, just very much middle of nowhere. He is a country boy and just loves
heart
out there.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And so he's sitting out there on the back porch of his cabin, and he's got his revolver, his radio, has a cigar in his newspaper, and reading the paper, and the radio's on, and the radio's like, well, an elk season has just started today, so local hunters and blah, blah. And Scott puts his paper down, and he looks up, one walking across his property. He reaches over, and just like that. So like he's just one of those guys who's completely self-reliant, you know, Survivor Series, he'd crush them.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's dedicated to what he does, and he's very specific about how he does it, because he takes it all very seriously. He doesn't do anything half-assed or with frivolous nature, and it was just a joy to work with him. He has some amazing stories, too. The man has lived an amazing life and just so compassionate and respectful to everyone around him. And honestly, in my opinion, I'm like, we should all be bowing down and getting him whatever he wants at any time.
He lifts
a finger and it's too much effort. But no, he's just such a sweet man and works really hard. So that was a great...
That's so great.
It was an awesome time. Yeah. If anything, he actually could go a little too hard. You know, sometimes you'll just get into it and you're moving really hard. And we had some moments I remember specifically where I was rehearsing with him and I was playing Charlie's part because Brewster was working with Charlie and playing my part with Charlie. And so I'm working with Scott and he just has to grab me and turn me. He grabs me, turns me, and almost hip tosses me over. I was like, okay, when you're doing it with Charlie, you don't need that much. But yeah, the man right. sure. He could absolutely be the guy that trained Daredevil.
That's awesome. Wow, awesome. That's crazy. And I know that there's like a stair flip at the end. Like, what was that like?
Oh, yeah. Brewster and I do a two-man Seiuchin. And so we start about three-quarters of the way up the stairs. The fight has progressed. And I have him kind of in a rough chokehold. And so to get out of it, he hurls himself forward. And so if I'm in back, he's in front, and he goes, rah, bah, and I land on the bottom. So we go from about almost the top of the stair, about three-quarters of the way up the staircase, do a front three-quarter down to the last stoop, or I guess whatever, the last platform of the stairs where it flattens out a bit. And we did have a wire on for that to help decel us a little bit, because Brewster at the time was 180 pounds.
Wow.
And doubling Scott, I was very lean. I was like 160 maybe. And so all that weight and pressure is just coming down into me and into my hips. And the first thing I thought was like, oh man, I'm going to separate my hips. all this weight, his weight crashing into me. My hips are just going to go and flay open.
Yeah.
It's going to be the end of it. So I actually wrapped myself quite a bit with ACE bandage. I had that before. Okay. And I wrapped them around my waist to try and just give myself some compression. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the gag went well. I think we only did it once. And an applause to our stunt coordinator, Philip Silvera. They had two different stoop bottoms that they had built because they break away. And they go, oh, we'll do one from here and we'll do one from there. Thinking, yeah, we're going to use them both. And Phil looked at him and he was like, we're not doing this more than once. Not unless we absolutely have to. It's not a simple gag. We could come up short and we could both head spike into the stairs. We could go too far and I could land on my tailbone with an extra 180 pounds on me and I could be paralyzed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's like, let's try to go for doing this once. Mm-hmm. And we'll get it. And luckily we got it and won. That was a fun gag. That whole fight was actually really fun, especially since I got to do it with someone that I've known. I've known Brewster for over 20 years. And wow. We got to do this awesome fight scene together on a big upcoming
cool.
show that ended up, when it came out, was Netflix's highest watched series.
It was so cool. Yeah. The series.
Yeah, it was a gift. It was great to be.
And I know you mentioned being around 160 for that show specifically. Are you shedding or gaining a lot of weight in between roles?
Later in my career, I have done that a lot. Over the past 5 months, I've done 20-plus pound weight swings up wow. and down, which can put a lot on your system. So right now, I'm at a stage where I'm just kind of settling into a comfortable weight, letting my body catch up, and then I need to actually work my way down a little. As many of my work compadres would tell you, I can get pretty focused on stuff like that. When I need to get bigger or I need to shred down or anything, I will do it. In the past, I have done it too aggressively. And there's always some kind of price you're going to pay for that. But since then, I have gotten much better about being able to do that in healthier ways. You know, you hear about someone like Christian Bale.
Yeah, the mechanist, right?
Right. And right after that, he did Batman. So he had done, I think someone had told me he had done an almost full 60-pound swing in a couple of months, which...
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not even just like, you know, you're like, oh man, you know, my joints are, you know, they have so much extra weight to deal with. It's your adrenal glands will just not know what to do. Your digestive system is like, do you want me to store this? Should I use it? What do you want me to do?
And he's done some crazy stuff. Yeah.
Oh yeah. And he said in interviews that he doesn't want to do that anymore. And I applaud it. Cause just after the few times I've had to do that, it takes its toll for sure.
It's just the speed, right? That you have to do it at, right?
Yeah. I recently, I was 173 this morning, but I needed to, I think this was about 3-4 months ago, I needed to get up and pretty much be as big as I could. And even being as big as I could, I wouldn't be quite big enough, but I'd keep working. And so in about a month and a half, I put on 25 pounds. Like I literally had to buy new shirts and stuff like that. I got as big as I could, as quick as I could. And when I was done doing that, I was like, well, I need to get this excess weight off me. And so I started doing that and my body responded really quickly. And in about 2 weeks, I lost 20 pounds.
It sounds like you have it down to like a science at that point.
I do. I work with these guys, Nick and Brandon. They have a company called FilmFit. And I met them actually. They used to actually both be personal trainers back on Banshee years ago.
Oh, okay.
And they started this company. Nick takes care of the workout side and Brandon takes care of the nutritional side. And the amount of things that I have learned, I used to work with Nick personally. If I had a job particularly, like for Punisher, when we got off of Punisher, I was like, I had put all the size on, but there was still a lot of water, excess water and fat and stuff. And I was like, how do I do this, but get rid of all of this? And Nick was one of those guys who was like, well, why don't we work together and try to get that done? So I learned a lot from Nick in the months that we had worked together. And I continue to work with Brandon when I need to do these big weight swings. I go, hey, look, this is where I'm at. This is my body fat right now. Mm-hmm. I need to get something closer to this. And this is the time frame that I have to do it. And he will build a comprehensive plan.
Wow.
Down to micronutrient, you know, what you need to take in based off workload, how much time you have. And they're phenomenal at what they do.
Wow.
So yeah, I would, if anyone listening ever needs that.
Big shout out.
Honestly, I've given their information to anyone that needs it. Doesn't mm-hmm. even need to just be related around film or anything like that. You just want to get a little healthier. You want to balance your diet out. These guys can help you do it.
Yeah. What's their company name again?
FilmFit. If you get on Instagram, you put in FilmFit, you'll find Nick and all of Nick's posts. And Nick works with a number of actors and people in the entertainment industry. And Brandon, yeah, like I said, is the nutritional guy. So you won't see much of Brandon's face, but Brandon's the guy working in the background, making sure you're eating what you need to eat and no more and no less.
Yeah. So you're doing all those meal preps yourself, but he kind of shows you how to do those.
Yeah. And from all the different things that I've done, like I said, they've taught me so much just through those experiences. So now I feel like I have a pretty good grasp on it, but every once in a while I like to change things up and Brandon will give me something new to do. But yeah, for many years now, I've been known as the guy that brings a gallon of water to work and has his meal in his bag because I'm always making my own food and meal prep and stuff like that.
Awesome. Awesome. Something we're trying to get into as well.
A little bit.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit.
And Darren, what project are we jumping to?
I think we want to touch on Deadpool slightly, if you do have time for that. Okay. We have about three more projects we'd like to touch on if you're
okay, sorry,
all right with that.
I'm blabbing your guys' ear off. Yeah, absolutely. Anything you guys want.
Let's get into Deadpool then.
Deadpool, I will tell you this. Again, Philip Severa was stunt coordinating when we were working on what work I did for Deadpool, which was some of the motion capture that they had done before they went to Canada to work on things. So they were also using us a little bit as guinea pigs to figure out some of the motion capture tech because they were trying to figure out some new ways to capture everything. Mm. So we were really in on a lot of the preparatory side of things, whereas you had those guys that were boots on the ground up that Canadian team, just phenomenal performers up there, did some amazing work. And then you had some more guys after the film was done that also did motion capture stuff, like Ross Kostman did that amazing corkscrew off the car. He corks off the car and then he shoots the gun. Mm-hmm. That slow-mo shot, Ross Kostman, amazing all day.
Wow.
But yeah.
So I guess first of all, first question always pops into my head for mocap. Did you have the ping pong balls or was it a little more sleek than that when you were doing mocap?
Yeah, this was years ago. So we have the Rokoku suits and all that stuff now, which you don't need a volume for. But yeah, back in the day when we were first doing Deadpool and a number of those other projects for NHL and stuff like that. Yeah, we had the ping pong balls on.
Nice.
And those Velcro, that Velcro is...
Oh.
The thing about it is, so the way that they secure those, they have these like eyelets of Velcro, but they're everywhere. So if you like go up and give someone a hug or shake a hand or you go to adjust something on yourself, you're going to tear, you end up with extra dots or not enough dots. And then you look up at the monitor and your arm is like this.
That's so funny.
Have you done mocap before that?
Yes. I was very lucky to do a lot of projects when I was first getting started. Mm-hmm. And that's one of my favorite mediums, honestly. It's very gratifying. It's similar in the sense of doing special effects makeup and being able to look like someone else. So then your movement can change. But it's gotten to the point nowadays, especially with motion capture, it's so crazy how quickly that they can do it in real time. They can just take the character they want you to look at, throw it onto the skeletal frame that you create. And so you can adjust your movement as you go, depending on how it appears with the character skeleton, which is super cool. And you're always going to get a better finished product with that. One thing that I did remember early on in my career was for the NHL. Transformers was very big and they had made Transformers for each of the NHL teams and they wanted to do motion capture, like a short little 5-second action bit or 10 seconds with each of these new NHL Transformers. And so I got to do a bunch of that and that was one of my first delves in, but that was really, really fun. It was very cool. There's nothing really like attacking and fighting someone that isn't there and then you watch and you go,
you're like,
oh,
wow, yeah.
That looks really cool.
Yeah. When you're watching it back, can you tell like who's doing what when you watch like the final product?
Yeah. Can you recognize your own motions?
A lot of times, yes. But sometimes we really are just frame of reference. And so sometimes they'll take something and they won't touch it at all. And it's like, this is perfect. We just throw the bones on it, little tweak here and it's done. But sometimes they really are just looking for, okay, that's how the human body functions in this moment. We're going to take that and we're going to recreate it. And so sometimes those little subtle nuances you would recognize are gone. But I've definitely recognized a number of my friends before. I'd be watching
really?
The show and I'm like, oh, it's Aaron Tony. That's definitely Aaron.
Just by the way, he's moving and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a language. So you get to just recognize people's movements and their style. And, you know, you can pick them out of a group, not even see their face. Oh, yeah, that was Hulk, for sure. That was definitely Hulk.
And Darren, did you want to jump into some Doctor Strange questions as well?
We're not exactly sure what specific scenes that you did, but we saw some stuff in your reels. And I guess generally, like, what was it like fighting with Doctor Strange's abilities, VFX wise, and I guess planning that out? I know we mentioned before a little bit of the Kung Fu background and incorporating that in. If you could touch a little bit on that.
So I worked on the reshoots of the first Doctor Strange film, which took place for about 2 or 3 months, I believe, in Los Angeles, under Tommy Hopper and Travis Wong with Guy De Silva. And so the training scene in the courtyard, when Strange pretty much is just first learning to try and create those weapons and ultimately, you know, gets his ass handed to him. That was one of the main fight scenes that we had done. We did a number of different wrecks and things like that, but absolutely I want to give credit for that of that film and his action and the entire most of that film to the UK team, because they shot a lot of that out in the UK, and those guys just did what an amazing job. It's a great film. It's one of those films that you read a comic and then you go, this would be really easy to mess up if this is a movie. Like, you could really make this not watchable. And they blew it out of the water. I thought they did a phenomenal job, and the action just elevated it. But yeah, we did some of those scenes. The scene with Dormammu when he's just getting smashed over and over again. That was
great.
Really, so he took some hits for this project.
Yeah. And that was almost like, you know, another mocap day, because again, we're not on this planet that Dormammu's on. We're not actually getting smashed. So you're just like self-motivating into the ground and then throwing yourself over here, and then someone's on a wire and yanks you out of frame. And but yeah, it was really fun, very gratifying. And Benedict is such a phenomenal actor.
Oh, Benedict Cumberbatch. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a great thing to just watch him work. And Benny Wong, he's hysterical, but also very, very focused and excellent as his job as well. Like,
right.
That was just a great experience. I really enjoyed that.
Another big family there as well.
Yeah, sounds absolutely. Like, yeah. And a number of the stunt performers actually played those characters, which I also thought was really cool, because that was one of the first times in this major film that I had seen, you know, like since the 80s, I felt like I'd actually seen stunt performers being given roles. And it's like, no, don't hide your face. We want to see it now.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty awesome. I know you talked a little bit about the big cape that he wears, like the 20 pound.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that the secret's out now that Benedict usually does not wear the cape at all. If you're seeing him and he's wearing the cape, he's not really wearing the cape. They will green dot him and add it. He might have like a bit of the collar. But it's understandable, because I did a number of the scenes, like in the street when he flies off to go deal with Dormammu. It's got to be at least a 20-pound cape. It's beautifully crafted. Wow. It is just this beautiful piece of material. And I had heard that they actually had, there was a girl who was in college that had the job of starting to make them, and they pulled her out of school and were like, hey, we're going to deal with school for you, but we need you to make 20 of these. And so her job for 6 months was to recreate that cape. And yeah, that work is just phenomenal.
How do you find the college kid that does that? That's great.
I don't know, but I applaud
her. Yeah. Yeah.
First day that I had a fitting, first thing we put on was the dojo kind of training in the courtyard outfit. And I was like, this is pretty cool. And then they went, ready?
Oh, no.
And they start putting the pieces on, and they actually have to attach the cape. They take there's plates built into the costume piece underneath, and they bring the cape over, and then they have to drill it into that, because
heavy,
it will just fly off. But yeah, beautiful construction. Another thing that just, I think the UK continuously nails is just some of their construction of such period pieces, or these dramatic like capes and coats and things like that. It was amazing. That costume is probably still one of my favorite ones that I ever put on, even though it's just for reshoots. Gratifying for sure. Satisfying.
Be the next Halloween costume there.
Yeah.
I guess from here, we could definitely jump into Falcon and the Winter Soldier, finally.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The first scene that I kind of wanted to touch upon was that scene where Lamar dies. But just before then, there's like this whole fight scene.
What's with all the knives?
Can you walk us through that whole process for that fight scene? That was episode 4, I believe. Yeah.
Yes, end of 4, because the top of 5 is what we call the Civil War 2.0 fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So episode 4, I don't know if I'm giving anything away.
Yeah, spoiler alert. So. Yeah, we always put that in there. Yeah.
After saying Lamar dies, then we're like, oh, by the way, there might be a spoiler coming up.
Well, yeah, when we had all done, myself, John and Mia, Aaron, Tony, we're all kind of comic book nerds. I think John leads us in that, maybe Aaron, but I definitely am not the top leader in that. But we did a lot of research into these characters, and especially for me, it was really rewarding to be able to be the first. Like, I've been able to double Captain America, and I've done some with Punisher and Doctor Strange and stuff, but there was always someone that had done those things before, and especially Captain America, what a huge character. And Sam Hargrave just set the bar. Jackson Spidell just kept pushing. And a number of the people that came after, as I like to say, wore the star, did a phenomenal job. And I'm so proud to have been on the list of people that have done that. But this was a character that I got to start fresh with and kind of help design. And my long working relationship with Dave McCumber, he gave me a lot of trust. However you think this guy should move, obviously, you know, Dave always has final say, but he allowed me to create so much and work with the team in creating that stuff. And I just had so much support with that. And that being said, we created massive scenes for that fight in 4. Episode 4 was almost entirely rewritten after we came back from the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
So a lot of the stuff that we had designed and created had to change, and it had to change real fast. So ultimately, in the end, I don't think we got to do everything that we wanted to do. And that actually, that fight was the last thing that we shot of the entire show. And wow. We were rushing out of Prague because they were closing their borders again. So we turned 2 days into 1. And
oh my gosh.
And then ran out for the second time. But when we were making that, we wanted to try and touch as much as we could. There's a bit of arrogance in that scene for John Walker. He's finally got the serum. You know, he's very much like Lamar, don't worry about it. Know who I am,
yeah.
Kind of thing. And so he goes in there a little bit too arrogantly, and ultimately it ends up costing him, you know, his dearest friend, the guy that's always been by his side. So we wanted to try and touch on some of those moments using, you know, his, where he's not really paying attention. He's being a little bit too light about, they're not taking it as seriously as he could. And the moment that those instincts or that those emotions that kind of took the forefront of his mind is when it cost him, you know, the most, and ultimately begins his arc into the anti-hero kind of world, as I like to say. But yeah, that was a lot to do. We did a lot of live editing. Paul Jennings, our second unit director, worked very closely with Dave McCumber and Mike Wilson to know exactly what we needed to shoot just that and no more. There's no time for extras. We've got to move. Like I said, I don't think we got to do everything we wanted to, but ultimately still a scene and a fight that we can be proud of. Everyone did such a great job. All those flag smashers, all our stunt doubles, flag smashers.
Yeah.
David Warren, who doubled the character of Lamar, the stunt double for him, took that gnarly wire gag into the column, which I think he did 3 takes of, and each one is oh, goodness. And he'd hop up. Was that
wow.
it?
That column smashes, right? A little bit when he went on impact?
Yeah. What we had done was we created a dead man system because that is a fake column. It does not exist in the building. So we couldn't technically smash into it because if he smashed into it, he'd go clean through it. And that doesn't serve the rest of the scene. So a dead man, we put him on a ratchet, a big air tank with a rod, and you hit a button, and a bunch of PSI goes through it, and the guy goes and just flies through frame. The dead man part of that is, so we hit that ratchet, he goes flying, and we set a limit line to just in front of that column so he doesn't hit the column, hopefully, and that dead man gives that violent reaction as if he had hit that column, which is just as violent, if not more so, than hitting the column itself, and then he bounces off. But they had to get a lot of force in there. Our amazing wire team, Mike Huggins, Ralph Koch, Nooner Saadi, all these guys, just amazing. Had created a great system, and it was one of those things we like to call a thumper. And David did so well with it, but I think it was on the first one, he went and hit the dead man, and his legs swung out, and it just busted the whole bottom of the column. So they had to like quickly repair it and get a few more takes in. But yeah, it was a great scene, and you never know exactly how they're going to play it. Wyatt did a great job. You know, we do previs of all these fights and stuff, and we try to include some of the dialogue, and if there's an emotional moment that will carry into action, we try to just give, you know, a small version. We're not looking to try and be the actors in the scene or tell them how they should do it, but we just we give a representation of what will be taking place, and then we get into the action. And yeah, I think they all did phenomenally.
I'm wondering. I saw like some of those previses that you guys did, and you did a lot of dialogue, like you said, in those previses. Are you sort of dictating what they're doing, and because it seemed kind of similar to the actual final piece there?
Well, in those, as I said, we're never dictating.
Okay.
All we want to do is make everyone use as little of their imagination while they're watching a previs as possible. So if we can make a reference of a digital car coming through frame as opposed to someone running by, or just say, you know, a title card of a car comes by, we're going to try and do that. Mm-hmm. And so because that dialogue that began that scene plays right into the action, we just kind of gave, you know, our delivery of what we would do. But yeah, the stunt department will never dictate what the director or actors will do on the day, because it's ultimately never up to us. Action should always continue to tell the story, which means we're not in charge of that story, but we're going to continue to tell whatever they begin to tell. So yeah, we're always just using that as bookends, you know, as placeholders, so that they can do what they need to do. And then ultimately, once they're done doing that, this is how we're going to continue to tell that story through movement.
Like even the previs is very, very entertaining to to watch.
Yeah, totally.
Thank you.
You see some of the CG bits that you guys threw in, like you're saying?
That's Dave McCumber, Mike Wilson, Kane Sinclair. I know Dan Carter had a little bit to do with that as well. I think Dave just got to a point where he's like, I'm just going to do it all.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to roto this thing out and put them on a city. Like one of the ones that I love, anytime you see the shield throws in the previs, that's me or who's ever doing it. That's them waving their arm and someone else building a shield from scratch, tracking it all the way through and bringing it all the way back. Like, I applaud those guys so much because it really does it in this Marvel universe, when you're dealing with so many, you know, superhuman abilities or powers or weapons or, you know, things that literally defy the laws of physics. If you have the ability to show those, so again, the people watching it have to use as little of their imagination as possible. They can just see it. Mm-hmm. It's always better. And Dave always puts that foot forward, for sure. Mm-hmm.
The way you're describing Dave, it sounds like it's so quick, like how he puts all these things together, and it's just within the next day, it's just like special effects budget, everything.
It honestly can be. Dave, I remember one, actually, to bring Banshee back up, we did a previs where we had to have a mirror that got broken, a stovetop burner had to be on, someone had to catch on fire, we needed blood, and for a teacup all to break. And I want to say he did all of that very roughly. These obviously aren't, you know, like cinema ready, but did all that in a rough cut in about 40 minutes.
Wow.
Just boop, 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 boop. Cool, it's done. What do you guys think?
Wow, that's speed.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Nice. Well, the guy doesn't sleep, so yeah.
That's true.
Right. Yeah. When you cut that out of your life, you have 24 hours to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And I saw in, you know, you mentioned calling it the Civil War 2.0, the fight scene, episode 5, Walker, Falcon, Bucky. We saw the previs for that. I know you guys had rash guards, each corresponding to the right, you know, outfit for all your characters. Did you have the rash guards beforehand, or was that something you had to pull
together?
Yeah,
that was really cool. I want to know where to get those.
Those were actually bought for the specific purpose of doing previs.
Oh, wow.
Again, just one of those things, like, nobody has to guess. It's not, this color means this. It's, that's a guy in a cap shirt. That's a guy in a Falcon shirt. That's a Winter Soldier shirt. And they really came in handy. We each had two of those because, I mean, we'd shoot previs pretty much every day. And the last thing you want to do is come in a rank shirt and make everyone hug and fight you. So yeah, that was an idea just to keep everything as simple as possible. I believe they had started doing that, I think, on Infinity War, actually, for a number of their previs. And it was just a great idea. It takes the guesswork out. And sometimes you can kind of see, it's like, oh, that looks good because, you know, the arm, you know, comes to here and, you know, we can play it like that. And, oh, the suit has, oh, and the star. And so you just make easier references to everything. But it is nice to go to work and go, oh, got to put my work shirt on. And it's, you know, Captain America shirt.
Yeah.
You want to do this?
Yeah, we do.
I guess I want to jump a little bit more into that scene. There's a lot of different like weapons and there's a lot of different abilities going on there.
Yeah.
I guess, what is it like to balance all that? I mean, obviously Dave is doing a lot of work on his end, but yeah, what was it like to be a part of that process where there's different things, the arm, you know?
The Civil War fight is, it's definitely my favorite fight. We did a lot of different versions of that fight to, because the location changed a number of times. You know, they wanted to include certain things and then we couldn't do this. And we originally it took place, I think it originally took place in a parking deck. So we were trying to go with a hell and rain. So we had fire explosions and then we had the sprinklers going off. And then,
oh, wow.
place in a different place. So we had vehicles involved in the whole thing. And then ultimately, you know, we ended where they call Pullman Yard, which is actually out here in Georgia. A number of things shoot there, Bad Boys 3, our show, and MacGyver, all sorts of stuff. Dave, so great at putting up the bumpers because you have a room full of very creative people. Aaron Tony, who's been doing Falcon since there's been a Falcon. John Ania, being the huge comic book nerd that he is, would delve so hard into this stuff and really wanted to put the best stamp on this that he could, it being his first time being Winter Soldier. After all the very talented people that have done it before, and me as well, I'm thinking, you know, I want to make something together that is just, it's going to stand alone. We can call it the Civil War 2.0, but we want it to be its own thing as much as we possibly can. And so Dave, like I said, would put those bumpers up because everyone's got these great ideas. And it's like, these are all great, but only the ones within here are the ones that are going to. Again, it was just one of those collaborations. On our first day of rehearsals, when we were still months and months away from shooting him, we started putting a blueprint together of that fight very early just to try and discover something early and then harness it. And so something that came out of that was I pitched the idea to use the shield as a weapon, mm-hmm. instead of yeah, it definitely. Just being something you throw, but that's what we call, what ended up being called the tomahawk grip, where mm-hmm. you turn the shield around and it's an extension of your arm and you're hacking and slashing with it almost like a sword or a baton or something like that. Because that to me specifically spoke to the emotional state of Walker. He's as it were, seeing red. He would, if he had the opportunity right now, he would kill Falcon, he would kill Winter Soldier. Anything that he could do at this moment just to get out of this situation and relieve some of this anguish and pain that he's feeling, you know, because it was a big mental turning point for the character. And so, again, we're never dictating, but I always like to come with my own feeling on what it might be. Unless someone tells me that, no, that's not what it is, I'm going to keep running with it. And Dave was like, 100% agree. So we called him Angry Cap. After Lamar's death, he was Angry Cap. Yeah. Anytime Dave needed to get me motivated on set, he'd look at me and he'd go, Angry Cap, and he'd just walk away. So it was great to be able to play off of an emotional place, because the choreography just kind of started to come, you know, and then, you know, the note of every maneuver is to try and just take the shield. Because ultimately, once you've taken the shield, the fight's over. Walker can fight and fuss about whatever he wants, but once you have that shield, that's what the whole thing is about. So there's a number of moments in it where that's all it is. Bucky will just run up with that mechanical arm and just try to sink into it and hold it. And that's when we had our standoff moment. Walker's holding the shield and Bucky has it by the other side. And we just right hands back and forth. Because ultimately, it's just whoever drops first wins. So
yeah.
Walker wants that shield and these guys just want to take it from him without hurting him. But Walker would go to any extent. Yeah, it was really satisfying fight and such a labor of love. I was really glad to be able to do that fight with who I did it. John Ania is an old friend that we come from the NASCAR circuit together. We used to compete together. And Aaron Tony is one of the first stunt people I ever met. And
yeah.
he is just an OG and someone I have learned so much from. So much of my wire work ability comes from watching Aaron Tony do his thing. So yeah, it was just a really satisfying thing to be able to do and be a part of the MCU in the way that it was, and hopefully open up some different avenues as we run along.
I was wondering, Mike, do you have any other questions?
I'm not going to lie. You touched on a lot of the things I wanted to mention. That tomahawk grip especially was awesome. it's like, I feel like we've seen the shield in so many different instances already. So finding a new way to have it feel so different and feel the momentum and the way it moves, be unique to this character, the way they're using it, that was phenomenal. And I'll also say I loved seeing the wings and seeing Falcon sort of having to fly in that, you know, it's in a building. So he's not going to fly away, but there's a point where you're grabbing him and he tries to fly away, but you're still attached. So you can use that momentum and you slam him back down.
Yeah.
Loved it from start to finish. That wasn't a question. That was an emphatic statement from me.
Yeah.
So that's all I have.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, we had the opportunity, like I said, we got a chance to make it and we had several versions. So we had been essentially training that fight, the three of us together and dancing with camera. Dave and Mike and all those guys came for, you know, a couple months. And then Wyatt, Sebastian, Anthony, you know, they didn't have near the same kind of training time. Those guys, they really had a lot to do, so much to do. And we asked a lot of them. We only had, I think, 2 days to shoot that fight. And Kevin Feige actually ended up seeing that previs and went, how much time did they save it? 5 days. Give them 5 days. So for a straight week, actually, it ended up being seven, some breakup and reshoot days. But ultimately, for 5 days straight, we hammered those guys and each other, just trying to get the best thing out that we could. And I'm very proud of them.
Yeah, the final product is just, wow.
Yeah.
We have this last section here called 5 Second Fight Club. And it's actually just hypothetical fights. And you have 5 seconds to tell us who you think would win in that fight.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. First one is Daredevil versus Punisher.
Daredevil.
Okay.
Because I think, don't get me wrong, Punisher is legit. But I think Daredevil would end up finding a way and he'd do it his way.
Okay.
No offense to John Bernthal. He's amazing.
Yeah.
Next one, we have Shang-Chi versus Iron Fist.
Shang-Chi. Those 10 rings. Cece and I literally just watched it the day before yesterday. And I was like,
oh, wow. Yeah, it's so crazy. Good. Yeah.
Those guys should be so proud of their work. They did amazing.
Yes. Big fans here. Big fans.
The next one, we have Donatello versus the Expert Village staff guy.
Donatello. Oh, man. I'm going to get a name tag made that just says the Expert Village staff guy.
We'll get you in anywhere. Next one, we have John Walker versus the Falcon, one-on-one this time. None of this two-timing, two-on-one nonsense. Straight up one-on-one.
I'm going to say John Walker. I'm going to say that also dependent on where. Because in the comic books, John Walker is sent, it's almost an alternate universe now. John Walker is sent to take the shield from Falcon. When he has it, and John Walker beats the crap out of it. But Falcon ends up getting away because he flies into a completely dark, blacked out tunnel. Walker can't see, and he has the goggles. And ultimately, that's how he's able to escape. But no goggles, no darkness. I think Walker takes it.
Damn. Citing your sources and everything. That was awesome.
Yeah, that was really good. Yeah, next we have an interesting pairing. We have Atroc from played by George St. Pierre versus George St. Pierre.
I'm going to say GSP, George St. Pierre. That man is unmatched. I don't think there's been one greater, and I don't know that there ever will be. And on top of it all, he's one of the sweetest human beings I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
As much as Batroc is awesome, Batroc's a kind of a showy, cocky guy, and that is not GSP. Yeah. He gets down to business. So yeah, GSP.
He wins at heart. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we have one more matchup here. We have Blade, the Wesley Snipes vampire hunter, versus Abraham Lincoln, the vampire hunter.
Wesley Snipes and Blade win.
Oh, man.
That's a good one.
Yeah, okay.
As much as I loved Abe and his alternate universe of slaying vampires, Blade is just awesome. Wesley Snipes, that whole team. I love those movies, especially the first one. It was stellar. And ultimately, I think it helped create some popularity for some comic book characters to be able to be developed in the future. So yeah, Blade.
That's true.
Yeah, gotta love Blade.
Oh, man. You guys had some good matchups there. That was nice.
Thank you.
Thank you for sticking it with us.
Oh, no. Thank you so much, guys. Yeah. I'm sorry. I hope I wasn't talking too much, but you asked such great pertinent questions. And you know, when you're passionate about it, you ask the right questions. So you probably get 30-minute answers. So
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess our final wrap-up questions is like, do you know where the audience can find you and any new projects that you're working on soon?
Well, you can find me on Instagram, Jeeton_, my first initial J, last name Eaton. And I'm always trying to post something up there. We're not a boastful bunch, but, you know, working in the shadows as we usually do, we like to try and put our work up there, if not even for the rest of our friends to tell us how good or bad it is. I am currently working on a project working with Dave McCumber again. I'm very fortunate to be able to
Great.
Do that. Yeah, you'll catch me playing a character and doing some doubling on She-Hulk when that comes out.
Okay.
I can't tell you who I doubled or who I played either.
We'll just have to find out.
So it could be She-Hulk. We're not denying that. That's still a possibility.
Yeah, we're not denying that aspect of it.
Yeah, thank you for staying. Yeah.
If you liked that, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/actionfilmmaking and leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. Stay up to date on the show by visiting our website, actiondecoded.com, and by following us on Instagram @ActionFilmmakingPodcast. Until next time, thanks for listening.